Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you As Above, So Below, hosted by the one and only Astrid. But before we begin, I'm going to issue a challenge. Wrestling with Yetus, which is some thoughts on getting older. Although the tale does not survive, Hercules' encounter with Yetus, known to us as old age, is preserved on ancient pottery. Yetus was said to be a child of Oedipus and Nyx, the primordial goddess of night, or sometimes the issue of Nyx alone. As can be expected, in some depictions our hero is engaged in staving off or actively fighting old age. The shriveled and diminutive Yetus doesn't seem to stand a chance. In other depictions, the encounter between Hercules and Yetus seems friendly, remarkably free of conflict. How do we reconcile these contradictory images? Perhaps they're different points in a greater tale. Perhaps they depict different incidents altogether. Alas, we may never know. Now that I'm in my 60s, with at least half of my life behind me, I would like to venture a guess. In my age, the impulse to mitigate the effects of aging, which can no longer be ignored, is quite strong. Exercise, supplementation, and diet are recruited, and a variety of cosmetic, emotional, mental, and spiritual techniques are gradually added to our arsenal of weapons until Yetus is kept at bay. Some fight harder with drugs, surgery, and fringe or cutting-edge science. Though this struggle, acceptance eventually emerges, and with it, peace. Embracing old age and facing the finality of all mortal life allows you to appreciate the preciousness of each and every passing moment. When I personally found myself there, I made an oath. Until I die, I resolve to fully live. Onward. And now, without further ado, the one and only Astrid. Greetings, Astrid. How are you today?
Greetings, Hercules, and to all our listeners out there. I'm doing fine. It was, you know, a nice one or two days, and you know, we'll have the rain again, and it's all a balance, and isn't that what it's about? New chapters, just as, you know, your prelude there alludes to. You know, not, everything is constantly changing. We have these expectations in life. Then we find some of these are illusions, and eerily enough, that's my topic tonight, expectations, deceptions, and illusions. And I will just use this one quote. This is my little quote in the beginning, and we can all see how it fits in everywhere. Documentation on paper is just that, not a guarantee to receive what has been promised. You know, we all have dreams, Hercules. We all have these expectations. We're told from young, if you do this, that hence that will happen, cause and effect.
Right.
And it happens both internally and externally. And that's going to be our discussion today. You know, tonight it will be some of the things that we have, or what we have, certain expectations, things we have been told and alluded to all throughout life. And particularly the last decade or so, we are becoming more aware that that is not the case. And with communication, when it is true communication, we begin to realize, like with the internet and more knowledge, that many things are an illusion, particularly when you need them the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to start with the job market. We were all told growing up, well, when you and I were growing up, a good education results in a good job. What did that mean? Yeah, go to high school, go to college. The big push was college, get your degree. And then as we went along, it said, well, you've got a BA or a BS. Why don't you go for a master's? And there's always a few that went for their doctorate. Better
right.
job security, better pay, better benefits. What do we mean by benefits? Well, you had health insurance. Notice I said had. You had sick days. There were unions involved that protected your rights. So, you know, that was the dream. And most of us growing up in our age, you know, the baby boomers,
mm-hmm.
you found a job you liked. It was relatively easy to get a job because things were on the the uprise. So things were moving up, and companies
right.
and businesses and schools were starting to expand. So you had these, you went in, you had maybe a few little candidates for a job. You got a job if you liked it. You stayed within that job, sometimes for decades. Not the case anymore.
Nope.
Very, very different. And you have to feel for all of these students now going out in the job market, or those who were at that point in their life where they felt they were secure, and then found out that's not the case anymore. And we have a couple reasons for that. Time, you know, again, changes, different chapters. And the pendulum never stays in the middle. But it's for a variety of reasons. It's not just always a natural cause and effect. Sometimes there are things that propagate it. We had COVID, which was, I think, the biggest shock for all of us. So many people were on an upward tick. They had a home. They had a mortgage. They had two jobs, you know, some three jobs, kids in great schools, you know, homes with mortgages that would blow your mind, things that were marketed to us saying that you had to have it in
right.
order to be happy. And, yes, now you can have it, options to have things that maybe only movie stars had or the uber rich had. And then COVID came along, and jobs went out the window. Businesses folded. Everything had to be virtual. I know quite a few people that lost their jobs. Then trying to get unemployment, wow. You know, because, again, the mad rush, it was a given. You expected that if you lost your job, you would get unemployment. Well, no one expected that many people would be unemployed at one time. I know for a fact several people that had, it took them 3 months to fill out an unemployment application. That's how bombed they were with unemployment. Good jobs, they said, well, there's a lot of economy, you know, the economy's gone up, and there are many, many different jobs that now, you know, the jobs were added that were basically, I think, 336,000 jobs. Oh, unemployment's, you know, really doing well. Not necessarily so. It depends on the type of job. Depends
right.
on the type of job you have. Is it white collar or is it blue collar? So they found that the pandemic brought down enrollment really early, greater intensity in terms of jobs. Schools, colleges, the enrollment's way down. Tech, media, finance, marketing, way down. Middle management, way down. Forbes said there was a major seismic shift thanks to the pandemic. Noticeable slowdown in hiring white-collar jobs. The 336,000 new jobs, they were basically, it's a tale of two markets. It was for blue-collar and service sector jobs. They grew, while the professional jobs were left in the dust. Technology, down 55%, banking, 40%, insurance, 18%, and that's just a few. We all know that there were big corporations that slashed jobs left and right last year. Amazon, Google, Facebook, or Meta if you want to call it that, BlackRock, huge employers cut them by double-digit thousands, saying
yeah.
they were streamlining it. And the joke is the terminology they always use, we're cutting the fat out.
Yes.
No, I don't think so. I think you're cutting the workforce so your profits stay high. That's what it is, because it always goes back to profit sharing, the stock market, and how things look. Here we go, how things look on paper, because they have to be all of these different CEOs and everybody, they have to be accountable to the board and to the shareholders. It always comes back to money and profit, doesn't it? It's quite sad. And so maybe it was going too high in terms of ignoring the workforce, blue-collar workers, skilled laborers. Try and get a plumber or an electrician you know, it's a major ordeal. They're overworked. Maybe it went too much one way, and this is just finding the middle of, you know, the needle in the middle and getting a counterbalance here. That could be one aspect. It can be that some markets expanded too readily because they're looking for a profit and too many stores, too many banks. I'm sure you've seen, like, how many. There was a point you can go in almost every couple of blocks, and there was one of your bank branches there. Now, good luck trying to find one that has a full office.
Right.
That will answer your questions. It's not the case anymore. So that's a big thing. Another thing is decreasing birth rates. And you have people can't afford to have bigger families now. And the reason why they had them at one time is different than having children now. Then there are people that elect not to have large families or choose not to bring children into such a chaotic world. Quite a few of my son's friends do not have children. They're getting married later, and their concept of marriage is different as well. So
right.
These are a lot of different factors here. A lot of different factors. What do you say to that?
I agree. It's I was a vocational counselor, and I worked in the workforce development and in vocational rehabilitation. And pretty much that where it was, you know, you get your high school diploma, you study for something and you get a bachelor's degree, you pick a career, you climb ladders, then you get high enough where you're in charge and so on and so forth. And
Up with mobile.
Yeah, and I did that for quite a while, for decades. When we moved to Pennsylvania, things changed because it wasn't an urban area with a very strong social net. So I had to figure out how to use my skills in different ways. So I got into the education field, and I was teaching college, and I was doing educational programs with the county. And so I was able to translate my skills. And because I was a vocational counselor, I knew how to do that. And then we moved back here, and it was a different set of circumstances. I didn't want to work in the human services anymore or in education. So started a bunch of different things. And even now we're adapting. I can't physically do a lot of what I was doing a couple of years ago. So I had to revamp everything, rethink it, retry to get it out there. And That's an ongoing process. So not like an actor or somebody in theater. It's like always looking for gigs.
Well, that's interesting because, again, there's another expectation and deception. You work hard. You work so many hours. You retire. You have Social Security. And then you can enjoy your life. You can travel. You can do this and can do that. And I'm sure so many of us have seen with our parents that wasn't the case. They had to, they worked till whatever age retirement was for them, 65. Now, a lot of them now at 70. That's gone up. And then there's the forced retirements because they don't want to pay people the higher fee or salary. They rather take a newcomer and pay them half of the money, which is interesting. So that's another thing. But then you start to see, yeah, I do have this, but how long is this money going to last me? And then I have friends of mine that do not have a pension, and they have just Social Security, or the job situation changed with COVID, and friend of mine, 70 years old, and has health issues, has to buy her own health insurance, and she is working two jobs. And she said, I'm awestruck. I'm awestruck that at this age I have to work two jobs.
Right.
One of them is a part-time job at Stop and Shop, loading groceries and fulfilling groceries, because life has changed. There are more of these, and I don't want to use the word menial because they're not menial. We found out through COVID that no job is menial. To be an assembly line worker, a factory worker, to be a healthcare aide, or someone that there's a waitress or whatever, these jobs are just as important. Matter of fact, they've seen that when they, with that in transportation as another one, that when they are nil, that the whole country stops. the whole country. It's not the CEOs that run things. They make the profits. It is the worker that does this. So, yeah, it's amazing. And another thing that's interesting is I mentioned how easy it was for us. There you go to a couple interviews, you got a job. You had maybe three or four people that you were up against. The job market with professionals is so flooded because in all these years, you know, more and more degrees and this and that, and fields became very specialized, that now people are finding, they are putting their resumes out everywhere, applicants of 300 to 400 for a job, which I'm always amazed when people say, there are jobs out there. Why can't, you know, why are there companies without people in the workforce? Well, yeah, there are jobs. Maybe they're really tough jobs with minimal pay. But if you went to school and you're paying off college loans and you're being told now that there are 400 to 500 applicants for the same job and they can afford to be choosy, the interview process now is by phone several times, then meeting in person several times. This can go on for 2-3 months, and maybe you'll get a call back. So very, very different. A lot of adaptation for the young, and sadly, for those that thought they were in a situation where they could provide for their families, are finding that's not the case now, and they have to find new ways to modify their way of living or what kind of a job they can have. Interesting. So, my advice is to really, what you just said, career awareness, there is not enough of it in high schools.
Not enough exposure. Back under, I'm not going to list the institution so it's not too embarrassing,
right.
But since I had started figuring out how to navigate in this market, in this commercial reality we find ourselves in, I offered to teach a free class at the library and other places, and nobody seemed interested. I had done it before when I first moved back here. I did that, and we had people coming in, and I was able to help them in a variety of different ways, and people came to rely upon the service. But after COVID, it seems nobody was interested.
Interesting. I did the same thing as well. You know, I would do professional development in my district in terms of going to different art conferences and everything and bringing back a wealth of information in relation to the colleges that were available and the professions that were available in art. And I would drop them off to the high school because I did not teach the high school level. Because the whole point is that we have to support one another and not just think of our own situation, but there's information out there, so why not disseminate it? And I felt it was an important thing, you know, portfolio readiness, getting kids ready for that, what colleges expected, what jobs were out there. And just because you go to school for something doesn't mean you're going to like it. I had quite a few friends that went into, took the student teaching, figured they're going to teach with an art degree, and guess what? They did their teaching experience, and they absolutely hated it. Whether it was a situation where they didn't have a good practice teacher, whether they thought it was going to be different, did not meet their expectations. Again, you know, expectations and deceptions and illusions that we have, you know, and just went completely different, off into a different field. So that's interesting. Education and awareness and like you always say, you know, communication and support systems. But because it isn't the same anymore, and we can't rely on a college degree, because there are very many people that have several college degrees that are not working in their field, or that are. I know someone that was a lawyer, because so many people went to school for law. She had to work as an intern for free,
right,
for two years before she could even get anywhere, an opening to find out if she could go further. So that was interesting.
That's something that's been part of reality for a while, though, and I've always recommended to people that they volunteer. not because they shouldn't get paid for the work they do, but just to get in the door. And if they volunteer, they could learn the basic skills by doing, then they'd have a reference. And if they're good enough, a volunteer, if something opens up, rather than hire somebody unknown and waste all that money and time training them, you already have someone who's semi-trained.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Now, it's funny you mentioned that, because that was one of the things that these people spend, big businesses and even smaller businesses spend time and money training someone. And then if the person doesn't work or decides they don't like it and they leave, they have to go through the expense of hiring someone again. So, and training them again, really interesting, you know. And so, you know, there are two sides of the coin. But at the same time, another issue I take great offense to is outsourcing. You know, this country went on a wild roller coaster ride in terms of let's not pay our employees and let's not give them medical benefits and how can we do that? And there were two ways of doing it. One, make people part-time, and that started in supermarkets. Once it starts in one place, people think they're immune. Oh, no. And then the other thing is that it's cheaper to outsource. Well, you know as well as I do now, all these companies have gotten rid of customer service. It's just cheaper to have people working it from home and not being paid you know, a salary, but being paid an hourly rate off the books or whatever, or just as a couple-hour part-time employee. And that also severely cut back on employment in this country, particularly professionals, because you had the techie jobs that went overseas. You had even the laborers that were doing things where they didn't want to pay them. So, okay, let's have our clothes made here or there. Let's have this made here and there. Oh, let's order all this stuff from China, even if it's subpar. And meanwhile, you didn't even know the quality of the products in terms of the ingredients, because we were taught that even like don't buy certain products from China because there's lead in the crayons, right. You know. And you had to do your all of a sudden you're doing so much research in terms of what you can and cannot buy. And again, COVID brought that back home. All of a sudden, people were realizing the importance. Well, not we all knew, but management, upper management and CEOs, all of a sudden began to realize the importance of the worker and how you can't always depend on a global economy. You know, it works, yes, but when there's a glitch somewhere, what are you going to do and how it affects? It's a domino effect. It affects everything.
Yeah, yes, it does. As I get older too, I you know, you have the understanding there's only so much you can do.
Right.
So what I've been trying to do is I've been trying to because again, we're experiencing old age, and old age is not something that's fun to the best of my knowledge.
Let's not call it old age, Hercules. When my cardiologist says, like, well, your heart is getting old, I said, no. You need to change that word because everything gets old. Say older because it's old, older, and oldest. You know, so let's look at it that way.
Older. And again, you find out that retirement isn't what they promised, and that you can't really survive on Social Security, so you have to figure out a way of cutting costs and making money. I've been thinking about doing an initiative and using the podcasts, part of them anyway, to kind of address this, to look at what support systems there are for seniors and try to create a net. There's a lot of places, because I'm in the human services and because I'm involved in local politics, that I know about them. Most people don't know about them.
Exactly. And I just put that up to someone about how much Sussex County offers in terms of public services and nonprofits. It's beyond belief. And funny that you're talking about, you know, medical issues, because my next topic of expectations and deceptions is about the medical field. Your medical insurance will cover your needs.
No, it won't.
Well, that is an unbelievable expectation, and that's one we all had so many years ago. Not so now. and we see the deceptions because most jobs deleted medical coverage as a job benefit. The other thing is that each state has its own marketplace of medical coverage with different copays, specifications, doctors, hospital choice, everything. You need a degree and maybe a whole month of just sitting there studying them. When you choose it, it is so confusing. But now, you know, there was a point when you had no choice. Now there is over choice, and it's very deceptive. Why do I say that? Because there is an illusion of safety nets. And many of these different insurances, you have to really study them. Because, of course, you know, is it affordable? And most people are paying upwards of, I don't know, like $400 upward, depending on their situation, single, family coverage, what kind of copay are they going to have? Is there an in-network, an out-of-network? Is it HMO, PPO? I mean, all these different little acronyms. And then there is that the one that I love the best. And that's called the illusion of the safety net of Medicare Advantage. Why do I say that? Because people forget that Medicare Advantage, they're still all separate insurance companies. Even Medicare, Medicare Part A is from the government. Then you pick up a supplement, which is Part B. That covers what Medicare does not cover, and possibly your 20%, whatever. It does not cover, you know, vision, dental, that type of a thing, and the script. But people have this illusion when they hear these things on the TV or in the newspaper, oh, yes, look at this, we cover this, we cover that. Well, buyer beware, because they are an insurance company out to make money. They
right.
do not offer the same level of choice as original Medicare and a supplemental plan. They have done studies. There's an advisor, Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, which is nonpartisan. It's an agency of Congress to oversee. They said in their March report that it could not conclude that Medicare Advantage provides better quality, because it seems like it does, doesn't it? They go on and on, oh, yeah, it's, you know, your dentist,
yeah.
you this or that. The big thing is, are you going to be able to choose your own doctor? Are you going to be able to choose your own hospital? They can change at any time who you go to. And the in-networks end up getting smaller and smaller. The other thing is the denial of claims for insurance are way higher on Medicare Advantage. Gotta be an educated consumer, and it's not easy because as you get older, you're expecting things to be easier. You hear, oh, yeah, Medicare, Medicare Advantage, whoopee. No, it's not the same. And you can't conclude that it's better, and you really need to look into it. That means if you can't do it yourself, you have to look into an insurance broker or insurance agent, and that you have to be careful because there's something known as a fiduciary. That is an agent who cannot act out of self-interest. That is the same for health, and that's the same for housing insurance as well. So what that means is that there are insurance agents that can only advise you certain insurances, whether it be house or and policies or medical, if it works and it's on the platform of the company they work for. So here comes a problem. That's why you've got to really, if you're going to be using someone, you have to really look into how they work, who are they tied to, are they a fiduciary? Interesting. Very, very interesting. As a matter of fact, there was a really big article in the New York Times about this last weekend, saying that a data company also profits by pushing low reimbursements. They're finding that patients are getting hit with big bills while insurers reap the fees. And some of these are really huge insurers. You know, United Healthcare? Unbelievable. And there is a little-known data and analytics firm called MultiPlan. It works with United Healthcare, Cigna, Aetna, and other big insurers to decide how much out-of-network medical providers should be paid. Because you know what happens, Hercules, if it's an out-of-network provider, because you have no choice, that's your doctor and they're not on the list anymore. They have to take what Medicare gives them, but then they pass the cost on to you.
Yes.
Big time. They are not controlled with what they can ask for. Where regular Medicare, and it's the same with regular health insurance, same thing. In-network, out-of-network, you got to really watch. Because what that means is, and they will tell you anything. Let me tell you that even the doctors, the dentists, they'll all tell you, oh, yeah, don't worry, it's out-of-network, we'll work with you. Well, wait, you got to go pay for a root canal or a crown or
yep.
a serious health issue. And some people have been given bills double-digit thousands, triple-digit thousands, because the only thing that they had that could save your life. That's a little frightening. A little frightening.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Unbelievable. And as we're talking about insurance, let's continue with the expectations. Well, you have house insurance, it's going to protect your assets. Everybody was felt so comfortable with their house insurance until the disasters started to increase. Thank you to climate change. Thank you to whatever, Nina, Nino, whatever. Things like Hurricane Sandy did it for New Jersey. People were shocked when they found out that house insurance companies, they just decided that they weren't going to pay, or it was going to take time, or decided how much insurance they can get. And we'll behold you if you have a second home. Some people found out they had a clause in their insurance, which they didn't know, that they'll pay on the first house, but this is a second house, like a house down the shore. Good luck. You're not getting a thing. So pretty mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing. During Sandy, we sustained a lot of damage. Our basement was like knee-deep in water. We had down there our not only our stuff, but our inventory from our store. And at the time, we had an eBay store, too. And thousands and thousands of dollars worth of stuff got destroyed by the water. And we found out that the insurance doesn't cover acts of God. So
how about that?
I asked which God. I'm friendly with a few. Maybe I can talk to them.
Exactly. But, yeah, Hurricane Sandy and, you know, all these other disasters, I mean, it's frightening what happened, you know, and what people's expectations were, how long it took to even have a claim filed, where were these people going to live. I did send you something via email, and it's by the Insurance Information Institute. It is not biased. It is an agency. You can contact them. I sent it your way. It tells you what to expect, what is normally covered by insurance policies, and what is not, and what is not. Just to have a basic foundation, you still have to really delve into and need a research degree to look into the policies. It's so confusing. But it is a start. It's a start. Also, I sent you another email about having an emergency kit, what you should put in the emergency, and disaster preparedness, you know, because there's so many issues with that. And people find out. I mean, we know there's certain things you're supposed to have, don't we, Hercules? Do you have it in your house? Do you have something you can carry out with extra meds and all your important papers and food and flashlights and batteries and everything?
No.
Do you have that?
We don't have
neither
that.
Do I. I have some. I have it all written down. Have I done it? No. And I think what happened in New Jersey this past week is that with that little tremor that we felt up here too,
that
was a shock, because Northeast does not normally have earthquakes. We don't. And then all of a sudden, you know, you look into it and you're like, wow, there's the Ramapo Fault that's right here. And let's also consider the fact that there's been enormous studies about fracking. And I won't go into that now because, you know, we have so much to cover tonight, but people need to do some research if they're unaware of what fracking does to the earth and how they do fracking. You know, miles and miles of high-powered pressure with water and chemicals into the earth in order to access fuel. You know, what are you doing to the earth? And what are you doing to our water supply? And what are you going to do with this contaminated water afterwards? Something to think about. You know, it may be fine for these corporations for their profits, but we have to also, and for people who have stock in these companies, but we have to look towards the future of our lives and the future generations and this planet in terms of what we do to it. So, yeah, that earthquake was a shock, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I was here at the computer working, and all of a sudden the computer was like dancing. It wasn't like trembling. I thought at first it was a train, but we haven't had trains through Tenafly for decades.
Here we go, another issue, right? Amazing, isn't it? And how did you find out about it? Here's the interesting thing. How did you find out about it?
The internet.
The internet, yes. Thank God our electrical grid was working, because that's another thing, a power grid. That's another issue. But, how are we in terms of disaster preparedness? And that's another thing I want to bring up in terms of expectations and delusions, because we assume that there's going to be communication and protection. Well, not always. Not always. And we've seen that in this country in terms of some of the disasters. And why? Because it's localized. And every area is different. That's why it's so important to be aware of preparedness in your own community and your own local. That's why the Open Records Act, which we discussed last time, is so important. Because if you want to access any of this information, when it was instituted, what are the documents? Because remember in the beginning what I said, documentation on paper, it's not a guarantee that you're going to get what's promised. Because preparedness and documentation is to make things look good to agencies that are above. Does it mean it's followed? Not always. And again, that depends on accountability and if people are doing their job. You could be in one school system and it's so tight, it's unbelievable. And disasters are two different things. Are you going to be in place? What do you need to be in place? And what do you have to do if you evacuate? Well, when we had this little earthquake, I was thinking to myself, how would you know what to do, where to go, what provisions are set in place? Are there drills? Are there notifications? And I thought of everything else that's set in place, and let me tell you, there's a lot of disparity. But I was talking to my friend who's from Taiwan, because I warned her previously, a couple days or maybe a week prior, that Taiwan had a very fierce earthquake, and she has relatives there yet. And she contacted them, and that's where the internet is very useful if the news you're getting is true, but you have to cross-check it. Exactly. You can't just accept one thing. You have to go on multiple sources. And she told me that since a child, she had to prepare for earthquakes. In Taiwan, they have drills and sirens, and it not only in school, but when you're at home. And it was for preparedness for earthquakes and preparedness for attacks from China because of Taiwan's sticky situation with China. And I was amazed. They knew what to do. They were trained. And there was a safety net there. Their expectations were being met. I don't know if that would be the situation here, and I'm not saying that there isn't a plan on a national level, but it's the national level, and the president and all these different departments cannot be at your door when this has happened. It's trickle down. It's up to the locals, and we saw that in terms of, let me find some of these situations here, where they got into it, and I just could not believe some of these alert-ready situations. Here we go. Canada's emergency is called Alert Ready TV radio system, and it's connected system. Switzerland uses repurposed air raid systems, and it's tested every year. Austria, Luxembourg, Denmark, Australia, Norway, they have these set in place. Australia even has evacuation centers for flooding. Emergency alerts by phone are here. You do have the wireless emergency alert system. You know when you're watching TV and all of a sudden that fateful moment in the show and all of a sudden you hear that blast and there's a line and you miss part of your show. Well, that is one. But I found out that the emergency alerts on the phone systems, they are not, they do not cut through a phone call. So if you're in a phone call, you better hope somebody text messages you or something. You know, and that's really the best way, having a system set in place where people communicate with each other, whether it be a community. Because you can't always rely or expect people to do what's on paper. August, that evacuation, there was no alert in Maui County in Hawaii. That was mind-blowing. The devastation there, unbelievable. There were glitches in the system in California where they prevented an evacuation alert as Hurricane Hillary approached California. There also, with the wildfires, there were areas where people were never notified and they couldn't escape and they burned to death.
Yeah.
So it doesn't always work. That's why it's really important to make sure you know what is going on in your own locality. When we had Hurricane Sandy, that hour, I could not believe. I could not get out of my community. Every area had huge trees down. There were no roadblocks. There was no way of knowing how you can get anywhere because there was no alert system. And what we ended up doing in my own little lake community is people got together. They opened up the lake office, and they had a generator, and they had charging stations so people would be able to communicate with one another. Somebody got on a Facebook page and alerted people, you know, in terms of what roads were closed. Don't take this road. Don't take that road. People checked up on neighbors. You have to have your own little system and not rely on this, and we should be able to hold people accountable for these things. We should.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be like what happened in California with that fire, where that whole community burned down, and because there were no alerts for those people. So, I mean, it happens, and you'd say, well, maybe not as often. It doesn't matter. What if it was you or your family? What about those people that had those expectations, you know, of having safety? So, alert to the wise.
Some communities, like the community I live in, you can sign up for a subscription service, and it's free, where the town, if anything's going on, will notify you by phone.
Right. That's just it. Every community varies. So in one community, like where you are, you have all these different options. In my county, some towns have things set in place. Some forget about it. They don't care. They just don't care. And when they were called to task during Hurricane Sandy, got a very belligerent attitude about it. You know, well, what do you expect and what do you want? Well, what do you want? You know, you're in a position of support for the community. And
right.
I'm sure you have, and if you don't have this set in place, then maybe you need to start thinking about setting something up in place. Because that's what you're supposed to be doing on your level. And again, it's accountability and checking up and seeing what's going on. And again, thank God for the Open Records Act to see what exists, to find out. Or even going to the, you know, Hoyle Records or to the local government, and I'm sure there are different, I'm not sure which ones, but which agencies within the town hall, you can access that information, because I know in our town hall there is disaster preparedness. And one of our neighbors actually was involved with that, where he had to go, where there were different disasters and he was on alert. So it's best to check and not wait for it to happen.
That's very true. And we used to have a disaster preparedness person when I was more active in the town. I knew the person at that point who was doing it. I don't know who's doing it now, but that person was training in New York. Yeah, sometimes it's the United
Nations. That's exactly
Nations,
it.
Other places.
Yes.
And so they'd always be prepared, and they would have talks at Borough Hall, at the Rotary, at...
Thank you.
You know,
there's got to be communication and training, for sure, and not just written on paper, for one. The other thing is that the CBS report noted that most emergency alerts came too late or not at all. As an example of Journeys End Mobile Park in 2017, that there were at least a dozen natural disasters in the last decade where alerts failed to be sent out. Federal law states that the National Wireless Emergency Act system be tested, I like this one, at least once every 3 years. Once every 3 years, I think that needs to be updated, considering the fact that disasters are happening at a faster pace and more readily. And we're talking about not just destruction of homes and location, which is bad enough, but loss of lives. How do you reckon with that?
It's hard, and it costs money, too. That's another thing.
Well, that's just that. That's a matter of priorities. You know, maybe they need to, like we say, you know, with jobs and everything, the priorities shift, and maybe having a $500,000 home is not a priority anymore. You know, just having a roof over your head and having, you know, three cars and a two-car garage is not all that important anymore. You know, priorities shift. Depending on the situation. And we need to adapt. There we go. Just like with older age, we need to adapt. And talking about all these disaster preparedness and saying, you know, things like, well, what about when you're in a lockdown situation, because that varies, to evacuation. I want to bring up schools because New Jersey is really up on it. As of November 2010, New Jersey required every school to have monthly fire drills within school hours. That's Chapter 4 of the New Jersey Fire Code. Also, the fire department does a yearly check. They come into schools and they check to see all the equipment's working and what they know as a disaster waiting to happen, where fire could possibly start. Which, you know, that's not the case in other states. Here we go about state rule. It started in 1908. I didn't know that. Fire drill started in 1908 after the 1903 Iroquois Theater fire in Chicago. It always takes a disaster, doesn't it, to get the ball going. But again, then you should be up on it and you should be updating and training, not just documentation on paper. There are specific drills for fire evacuation and lockdowns in school. But somebody brought up to me this fact. They said, when in a school, how many schools do this? Let's put it that way, not when. Do they block exits? So they, because usually it's routine and they tell you, oh, good, here's a routine situation. This is the stairway you're going to use. This is the exit you use. And you go to a certain block and then you wait for the school bell or whatever, an alarm. What happens if a section is blocked off? What happens if it's in a lunchroom? The chaos with all the kids in a lunchroom. These are things that need to be addressed. And so I say, you know, and it can't just be on paper. It needs to be done this way. And documentation, you have to make it mandatory. You have to have the blocked exits. You need proper PD. You need signs in the room. What if you're a teacher and you're out and there's somebody, a substitute there? You know, we had to have signs with codes and color codes to know if an announcement came over or if something happened, what you did. And then it always comes back to the head, the efficiency of administration and the local authorities. You know, it always comes back to that. How good are they? Really important. And even within the same district, my school was so phenomenal because the administrator was. It doesn't mean it's that way in other schools. Some are very laissez-faire because the administrator's laissez-faire. Then I'll never forget, and I don't think most of us can, the shooting in Uvalde, Texas, at Robb Elementary. How could that have happened? No plan No plan. I mean, no, there was a plan on paper. They waited too long to confront the gunman. 77 minutes before officers that were outside access inside, and they never tried to open the door with the key. Guess what? That school didn't have doors that locked from the inside. And in Texas, 36% of schools in Texas do not have doors that lock from the inside, which means the teacher would have to go to the outside with the key and lock the door, putting themselves in danger and alerting them. You know, I mean, that's mind-blowing. And, again, poor training, poor communication. It took a special agent at the Texas Department of Public Safety who arrived 20 minutes after the shooting started and asked about the kids in the room. Are the kids there? And everybody's looking at each other like, duh, you know, with their fingers pointing a different way. An hour later, a tactical team from a border control breached the classroom door. How can you justify that? How can you justify it? Those parents had expectations that their kids were safe in school. And they have a right to expect that. And with all these different shootings, there were a lot of safety measures set in place, but not everywhere. And how many have just documentation but don't go through the active practice?
Right.
You know, of bomb scares, of evacuation, of what to do when somebody invades the building. And the belligerence, I'm sorry, the belligerence in Texas over that was unbelievable when they were called to task. Everybody pointing fingers, nobody wanting to accept responsibility. When the DOJ, Department of Justice, got involved, they found there were errors from the top to the bottom, you know, in terms of every aspect of it. All those people and all those agencies, and it took that long to resolve it, and parents arrested for trying to go in and save their children. Wow.
Yeah, I remember that.
Wow. That has to be one of the worst situations. There are many, but that has to be one of the worst in this country. How can you justify having a job of keeping children safe, keeping adults safe, being in a school that's supposed to protect and serve, and it didn't happen?
Yeah, it's very sad that that happened. I know here, because I do after-school enrichment programs,
right.
I know now they have all these procedures in place. If you're coming in, even if they know you, they make sure that you're in the system and you've been fingerprinted and cleared by the FBI and I believe the state. And then you still have to show your driver's license, even though they know who you are. And then you have to wear an ID while you're there. Some of them, it's laminates with something to hang it around your neck. With others, it's a sticker that you put on yourself while you're there. And so I'm happy that it's worth,
And it depends on the locality. I have a problem with voting that goes on during school time. Doors wide open, people going in and out with the amount of bad situations that have happened. Wouldn't that be something where you would rethink that? Or
They stopped it in my town years ago, because when I first came here, I used to work the polls, and I did that until fairly recently. It was initially in schools and other places. It's no longer in any of the schools. They moved them all.
Well, bravo to them. It's not the case in a lot of in the towns I know, you know. Some of them, I mean, up here it varies. I mean, there are many other locations. I don't think they are in schools up here, to be quite honest, because ours are public agencies or firehouses. But I do know where I worked, which will be unnamed, they're all in schools. And it used to petrify me. It used to petrify me because doors wide open, how many entrances and exits, people going in and out, you have no idea of what's going on in the school before or after the school hours with that door wide open and easy access. So one time when there are no controls. So, you know, as a parent, it'd be a good thing to look into your PTO or PTA, what's going on. Right to know, you know, what's going on in the school. How do you protect our kids? What documents are there? What training is there for the staff? And, you know, all the way around, evacuation. You want to know your local that you live in? Where can I go? Well, contact the city hall or the town council, whatever. There are agencies that have that information, and they have to give it to you. And
right.
You want to see it, and you want to make sure it's followed up. And we were very lucky in our situation where we had a parent liaison who fought for the parents because not all the parents could speak English. And then it is just, you need a communicator, you know, someone like you that relays information. And some parents are so busy. Let's face it, people are busy. And they're hoping that the school's in charge of what they should be doing. But unfortunately, nowadays, we have to become our own best proactive agents. And not just ourselves, but for the community, you know, to find out, well, you know this, you know that. Well, when you do find something out that's positive or negative, to alert other people so they're aware. You know, hey, did you know they're trying to close the Open Records Act, like we mentioned last month? And all of a sudden, people showed up in Trenton, and it got shelved. They're going to revisit it, but it doesn't mean they're not going to try and stop it again. So accountability is important.
Yes, it most certainly is. And we live in a world, unfortunately, where the trend is to point to other people, as you've pointed out several times, and not take responsibility. And that comes from the top all the way to the local level.
All the way down. Right, because it comes down, you know what? It comes down to human beings. And we said they're external and they're internal. And we can end with this. The internal expectations and the deceptions and illusions. We expect that if we treat people decently, they will do the same back to us. It's a little shocking. The road rage is shocking when people that are supposedly leaders get up and they denigrate people and call them names, because if you're in school, that child will be sent down to the office or possibly even suspended based on the severity of what they were saying. So it all comes down to that. You know, we have to be our own advocates, but we have to also start with ourselves and call people on it. And now people are even afraid to call people on what they do because of the violence factor. So, you know, we start with ourselves and our own communities. That's the best step, because we can't have those expectations anymore. We can't rely on the fact that there's a plan written on paper. Yeah, there are rules for everything. Does it mean some follow to the letter of the T? Some don't, because it comes down to human nature. And some will go with the crowd rather than their conscience of the golden rule.
Very, very true. And unfortunately, we have to end the conversation on that note.
What a great closing, Hercules. When we go back to square one, the pendulum swings back and forth. Every chapter of our lives, every chapter of every decade and era brings new things, and we have to adapt to them. And my message is, let's not have the expectations and have the rug pulled out from under our feet.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen to any of us.
No. I did send you some emails with some info for people.
I will find them and I will share them. Thank you very much, Astrid. People can still reach you through me. Is there any other way they can reach you?
Right now, that's the way it is. I'm really wrapped up with a couple people that need extra help in their lives.
Okay.
And so I'm concentrating on them right now because they need a support system. But it will happen. I'm still working on that one particular thing online that in terms of linking up and supports and getting it from me to you so they can access not just me and contact me, but contact you as well. So that's the next thing, probably next month, because it's totally insane this month.
I certainly understand, and I appreciate everything that you do. You're awesome, Astrid, and I'm blessed that we get a chance to talk once a month. I miss you.
Well, you know, it's all about networking and people there to you know, put the one hand out for the other, just like you do for others, and you were a blessing to me, and may we all turn around and be a blessing to someone else.
And that's the perfect place to end the show. Thank you, Astrid. Good night, and thank you, all listeners. May all go well with you. Until next time, joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody.
I second that.